Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with a very special guest, Wesley Fox. He's been on three episodes of The Haunting. He's written several books, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his story tonight. Welcome, Wesley.
Welcome. How are you guys?
Well, we never complain, and if we do, listeners don't like to hear it. So tell us a little bit about what got you into the paranormal.
Well, I got into paranormal, honestly, was when I was about 8 years old, living in a haunted house. My family did not believe in ghosts at all. They thought that, you know, if you believed in ghosts, you were just kind of crazy or, you know, out of your mind in some way, shape, or form. But, and that's the way, you know, reality was, really, in, for most of 1983. But after living in this house for, just a couple of days, weird things started happening. Slowly but surely, they picked on mostly me and my sister, Mary. And then, you know, of course, it gradually picked up to messing with my mom and my dad to where they finally said, okay, yeah, there's something going on here, but we just don't know what. To make the long story short, we ended up going to a Baptist preacher at that point. And he kind of laughed at us and said, well, you know, ghosts and demons are like cartoon characters. They don't exist. Which, at that point, you know, I won't go into it, but my mother went off on him. Totally. She was angry. And my mom's not that really that type of person at all, but she really let him have it. But we ended up having my aunt come down. My aunt, you know, if anyone was going to believe something was going on, it would be her. And she would be more of what I would see as like an empath. You know, she could feel things and she could definitely see some things too. So my dad asked her to come down and her and my uncle come down for, you know, just a real quick trip because it was the middle of the week and my uncle had to work. So they came down for like 12, 14 hours, something like that. And just within that short amount of time, before she left, she told my family, or my dad, she goes, you need to get out of that house, this house now. If you don't, you know, Mary's probably would get possessed. So we ended up moving out the next day. We didn't, you know, we were lucky. It did not follow us. But, you know, in the long run, I think a curse did. And, you know, at that point, with us reaching out to try to get, you know, to find somebody that could help us and really could. And that made me want to grow up and study and learn as much as I could about, you know, unfortunately, demonology and stuff like that. So that's where I could help people with, you know, their haunted issues. And that's what I have set out to do.
Well, you know, I think that it's interesting that every time we talk about stories with the paranormal and the real paranormal investigators and the real people that dig into it and those that help it seems to be a repetitive thing that a lot of us have our own experience that drags us in. And then, of course, you have to get answers to that. So you start digging and then you realize that this is something you can help with or something that you really it takes a lifetime to learn a lot of this. it's kind of amazing that it's a repetitive notion. A lot of us have the same situation. We've either had a haunted experience or some sort of experience that drug us into that, if that makes any sense at all. And it kind of builds from there.
Oh, I think it makes a lot of sense because a lot of the people that I've talked to, you know, and a lot of them, you know, they don't believe until something happens to them. Or, you know, just like me, they had an experience, so therefore they, you know, they're searching for answers too.
I know you use the word unfortunate with demonology, but you know, there are some useful things you can learn from that. A lot of people, I think, when they jump into the term demonology, they think it's all conjuring spells and controlling demons and using incantations and things like that. But reality is, from what I've learned from 15 or 20 years of theology is and research and studying demonology, is a lot of it is just studying demons and knowing the differences and knowing a lot of things that the common public has no idea about. So it can be useful. It's just not something that the average person sets out to read.
Yeah, my wife gets kind of angry at me because we'll be watching Ghost Adventures or her favorite Dead Files. And, you know, they're talking about this or that. And I'm saying, you idiot, it's a demon. It's obvious. She just kind of looks over at me and shakes her head. It's like, shut up. We know this. Just watch it. She's over smiling at me now.
I tend to not watch a lot of the shows that are on TV when it's Dead Files. And I mean, I used to watch them all the time, and every now and then when there's absolutely nothing on TV, you flip back to it and watch it. But these days, I don't watch a lot of ghost shows. I spent so long in it that I tend to watch them, and you just have those headbanging moments of wanting to slap your hand over your head and go, oh, my God.
Yeah, that's me. Like, I honestly don't even like watching, you know, the episodes of The Haunting, you know, that I've been on. I mean, I know how the show works. I know that, you know, everything, the stories that we told, they, you know, they bring it into one big, you know, basically one big script. And they leave so much out that, you know, like the scary stuff they showed to what happened to my family. You know, those things happen. Maybe in a different sequence. That, I mean, I know for a fact that that's the way those things happen. They did a really good job, that aspect, but they just let so much out. Like, they had, you know, my family's episode, that it was just me and my sister that, you know, were the only kids from my mom and dad, and that's not the case. We were just the youngest two that actually lived there from, you know, basically from the time we moved to the time we moved in to the time we left. But there were six of us kids. And then my sister also was babysitting our niece, which was 1.5 years old, which my book, House of Echoes, I talk a lot more about, you know, about that and about her torment she went through, because they tormented the heck out of that poor baby. She was only 1.5 at the time.
You know, that's a common thing that I express a lot of times when people talk about television. And I never put down anybody that produces the shows or that spends time on the shows or even the actors in the shows of reality TV, because it's a hard job. But I think a lot of people don't realize that there are a lot of things left out, whether it's telling the story in a Haunting or a couple other shows like that, or it's being present at the location. Reality is, when you edit all this stuff, you have an hour to put it together. You have to make sure it gets the ratings. You have to make sure that it looks pretty. So a lot of the reality, the real truth, the real stories just kind of go to the wayside. because ultimately, it's to get people to watch. And if people don't watch, it doesn't stay on. You know, I respect that. I understand that. That's what media is. It's to entertain and to tell people stories and to give people something to watch. But I think a lot of people get that confused. You know, they watch the TV shows. They think this is the way it is. And some shows do really well at it. They try to tell as much of the factors as they can. Some other shows don't do very well at it. And it's given a tendency of the wrong impression on the paranormal, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it does. You know, because, I mean, honestly, I had no idea how that stuff worked until we did our first set of interviews, you know, which I know that the Child's Play episode came on first, but I actually did the interviews for my family story, you know, first, if that makes any sense. And, you know, everybody with the television series, The Haunting, are very, very nice people. You know, we had good interviews. They knew my sister Mary at the time was very sick. You know, they knew she was sick with cancer. So instead of her coming to Mom and I, like, you know, it normally would have happened, they actually flew me and my mother down to Texas to where Mary was at, and we did the interviews close to her because they just did not want her to travel. Which, I mean, Mary was very sick because she ended up passing away. Just, we did the interviews in May. And then in November, she ended up passing away.
I'm sorry to hear that. Actually, it's a terrible thing to have to go through. It was great that they walked through and helped along the way without making a lot of demands. I know that some shows are very, very good with that, and then other shows are just straight down to earth and so forth. But I have learned in the paranormal world, whether you're dealing with Zach and his show, whether you're dealing with ghost hunters, whether you're dealing with any of them, and I won't get into a lot of names because obviously I don't have permission on them. From what I have heard, and from being on the back end sometimes myself, a lot of them aren't as evil as people make them out to be. They're all very nice about the show. They all try to work with you and so forth. The confusion gets in when you're trying to get the ratings and you're cutting things together and the ending result. But the production teams, the actors, the people that are telling the stories, the camera guys, most everybody that's on the set really are delightful people in most cases.
that's pretty much what we ran into.
That's another thing I think that gets confused a lot of times. People really trash, and I had this conversation actually just this week. People really trash a lot of TV shows and a lot of the actors on the TV shows, but they also have to understand what their job is. It's not an easy job going out there every week, every hour of every day, whether you're actually on a reality show or whether you're out there trying to produce the show and doing something that's more storyline like what you were on. It's not an easy task doing this every week. You don't get to see your family. You have to live up to high expectations. You have the whole world watching you. And if you flub up just the slightest, you know you're going to get ridiculed for it. On top of that, if you're in reality TV, like a few of the people that I'm going to have the privilege of having on the show here this year, it's tough to live up to those expectations. You know that you have the ratings. You know you have network people breathing down. You know you want to keep something that's real. But you also know in reality, as you know, I'm sure you've done plenty of investigations now, when we go out in the field, sometimes – we could sit there for 8 hours, 10 hours, sometimes 3 or 4
Oh yeah, we've had it. You know, to where we've gone out. You know, like you said, you know, 4 or 5 hours and nothing. Come back the very next day or something, and you know, you have all hell's breaking loose. So it's just kind of you never know. The way I always like to say it, even on the ghost tours, you know, just because you throw a ghost a party, don't mean that they show up. You know, I know we were talking about my family, but I was getting ready to go into a book that should be released probably Sunday, which is called House of Echoes 2, which in that book I talk about, you know, because I mentioned earlier about, you know, that the paranormal part didn't follow us, but a curse did. And I briefly touched on that with my sister Mary, but... you know, to me, the family curse basically started, you know, a little bit later on when Mary had her had a son in about 1985. When he ended up having a kidney disease. And then when he was 8 years old, she lost him from an accident, which, you know, the curse didn't really even stop there. By 2000, well, it was actually the winter of 1999, my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And it was so bad at that point, it already spread out through his bones. And he ended up passing away May 1st, which, you know, he was in the house. December 2013, the very end of December 2013, my sister Barb passed away, which I talk about her, you know, in the book because she was in the house for a while. She passed away in her sleep in a heart attack, and she was in her 40s. And then just under a year, because it would have been, that would have been December 2013, when we lost Mary. She lost her battle with cancer in November 24th, 2015. And then just, oh my gosh, probably a little over a year later, my brother Jim, what he was in the house the first couple weeks we lived there, he passed away from cancer. Would have been like September 1st or 2nd of 2016.
So now, you feel I mean, it's just like there's a very kind of few followed left. Along with you?
With me, I mean, I think this purse stopped when I received a phone call. I received a phone call from a lady that needed some help. Come to find out, she lived almost like across, you know, a field from where the old house used to sit there and roll, which is no longer there now. It was torn down in 85. But a new subdivision that was built, she lived just, you know, right across the street. And she could look out, like, I think it was her kitchen window, and she could see where the old property was. And this girl was a perfect, what I call a perfect walking vessel. She had played with the Ouija board from the time she was 9 years old to like 24. She was, after that, she got into some heroin use for a while. You know, she got herself clean. She left where she was at, which was Texas at the time. She moved to there to Lowell. And she ended up, of course, you know, walking around sometimes. She'd walk around, walk right through that property and not even have a clue, you know, what used to be there. So, honestly, I think something from that was able to attach to her. I mean, she, like I said, she was a perfect vessel for it. She ended up getting a hold of me. She seen me in one of the episodes of The Haunting and contacted me, asked for help, you know, what could she do. And everything that I was told, you know, it sounded like she needed an exorcism because, you know, she would lose sense of like, she'd be missing, like, 20 minutes at a time to an hour at a time. She wouldn't even know what happened. But her fiancé would tell us about, you know, her eyes sometimes just go to pure black. And she'd start laughing hysterical or being, you know, mean. You know, at one time she attacked him and left three large scratches on his back and all kinds of crazy stuff. At the time, I was running the ghost tours in Branson, and she got a hold of me, and I told her, I said, you know, if you'd like to come up here to Branson, you know, I'm more than willing to try to help you to, you know, the best of my ability. You know, we'll get you help one way or the other, whether we just need to give you a good blessing or, you know, if we need to do an exorcism, we will do that. So that day came. She went on the ghost tour with us because I just happened to have reservations that night. And during one of the stories, I was telling the story, but I was kind of looking around at everybody, but I could see her eyes change, and she changed, and she was glaring at me. Oh, my gosh, that stare was like, almost like she was piercing into my soul. It was wicked. A couple of my team members was there on the tour with me, and they kind of caught wind of what was going on, so they kind of went around and kind of talked to her and did a praying over her a little bit. Which calmed her down, you know, enough to the end of the tour. Then we went to her motel room and we ended up doing an exorcism. Now, this was during the time that my ex-partner, as I will call her, you know, and it's the same one, of course, that was on the other two episodes of A Haunting with me. We are no longer working together, and this was during a real major rough patch anyway. We had just started adopting fostering two little girls, and during that time, you know, we couldn't just go help people when we needed, you know, either one of us or the other. And of course, it was always picked out that I'd be the one to go help whoever I needed to help, which I don't know, I think part of me knew that, you know, something was coming up and I needed to be able to stand on my own 2 feet anyway when it comes to the exorcisms and stuff like that. So yeah, I had, you know, a couple of my team members and one of my main guys, Tim Hibden. You know, he's done a lot of filming with us and he's done some exorcisms with us, so I trusted him tremendously. We went in, went to the motel, you know, did the exorcism. At first, you know, I was doing just kind of a different prayers and seeing how she reacted. And of course, as soon as we said a prayer and touched her with holy water, it changed quickly. We have the whole incident on video, but we ended up, it was actually the shortest exorcism I've ever been involved with in my life, and it was 29 minutes, I think, total. But part of it, you know, when I said, you know, when I finally commanded the name, you know, what is your name? In the name of Jesus Christ, what is your name? It told me, I will burn my name into your soul. You will die with it, just like your family did. And, of course, there's a couple of explicits in there that I won't say. But, you know, we ended up exercising her. She is perfectly fine to this day. And to that point there, I believe the curse has just kind of been broken because we haven't had no more issues. Family's been good for a while, of course. I think I've suffered after that probably the most. You know, I ended up, my ex-partner and I ended up splitting up. We had a lot of issues. I'll be totally honest here. I started drinking a lot more than what I normally did. So I was probably well on my way to become an alcoholic. But, you know, I think everything was caught in time because I've been able to pull myself up. I just recently married the love of my life on Valentine's Day, Miss Nikki Fox. And we are doing wonderfully. And I haven't had anything to drink in like 62 days. So everything's been good now.
Well, congratulations. That's an incredible step for anybody that's ever ran into some tough things, especially if you're drinking during that period in time. I had my spurt a number of years ago, long time ago, but I know it's not easy getting away from the habit, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough because, you know, after an investigation or something, I was like, damn, you know, I need a beer just to kind of relax. And I think it just kind of got worse. And then I'm sure doing all the demonic cases that we did do, I'm sure there was some extra influence in there. But, you know, I think, you know, really not too long after Nikki and I got together, you know, things change. I think, you know, when you're really happy too, that helps. And, you know, there's a happiness, I think, about myself and about everything that just was never there before.
Well, yeah, and of course, knowing what I know from the demonic end in itself, though it's rare when you're dealing with those cases, even when it has nothing to do with exorcism or possession, it takes its toll on you as it is. It's a stressful thing to be even near or around a situation like that. So it's not surprising that you go home and you unwind with drinking something. But unfortunately, all of that stress still builds up, and then if you add the alcohol on top of it, it can become pretty tough to deal with.
You know, I think with me, honestly, and this is just, you know, to me right now, I'm not even on the radio, I'm just talking with a friend, you know, but I think with me, between the stress of that, of, you know, the different cases, and of course, I was being tormented through a paranormal blog that I won't mention no more about, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And most other people do too. By certain individuals, you know, coming up with all kinds of lies and stuff. I'm just trying to throw my name in the dirt. You know, that didn't help. It really did. But I think a lot of time too, when it comes to the extra influence of a demonic, I think I had too big of an ego thinking, oh, I ain't got to worry about that. You know, but and at the back of my mind, it's like, oh, yeah, you do. You're just like everybody else. They'll get you too. In fact, you're probably a little more of a target than some now because you've, you know, stuck your head, you know, your hand in the demonic, basically, by helping people.
Yeah, because now you know. And when you know and you're aware of these things and you start to fight back, sometimes they bite back.
Yeah, but that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I walked away from a lot of things personally myself when dealing with the demonic and more of the dangerous cases. I spent about 5 to 6 years in investigation. A lot of what we did were darker cases. But I walked away from it because it just took too much of a toll on me. I couldn't deal with that and life, so it was time to kind of back off. And it took me quite a while to get back into the paranormal after that. So I can definitely
I think
relate.
With me, it's, you know, I've had a little bit of a break. I haven't done hardly, you know, any investigations, nothing major in a while. I mean, I've done a couple house blessings, you know, minor, nothing major type things. Of course, I'm not even doing, you know, the Branson Ghost Tour anymore. We're getting ready to start the Columbus Ghost Tour up here. I'm hoping by the end of April, early May. But, you know, we will, you know, I'm not going to go on with Branson Paranormal because I had the ex-partner involved, and this is going to be something totally new, fresh. You know, with U.S. Paranormal, which I'll still do things the way we always do. You know, when we help people, it will be through Christ only, no other way. And that's just, you know, my personal beliefs, and that's Nikki's beliefs as well. But, you know, also, I didn't even realize it really until recently, but, you know, Leslie, I haven't put out a new book in 2 years. You know, nothing in 16, nothing in 17. What's up with that? So, just recently, I released House of Echoes, A Family's Curse, which is just a little bit of a special edition, updated version of House of Echoes. House of Echoes 2 should be out. I'm saying about Monday, for sure. I've gone through the last little stages. So it should be ready to release to public on Monday. I've released Branson Ghost Tours, The Stories. I released that, I think, last Saturday. And then I've got the Dark Craft 2 rope ready to go. We're in the middle of editing it. It should be out, I'm hoping, within the next month and a half. And then also we have Bonnie and Clyde ghost stories that should be coming out here probably within a week. Because that's basically a script of when we did the Rig Springs ghost tour, which, you know, there's a whole bunch of Bonnie and Clyde stuff over there. So we're going to do a ghost tour over there. And it never really worked out the way we wanted it to. And, of course, I'm not living there now, so I'm just going to take the script that I wrote, that, you know, I did all the, you know, the work on putting the story together, and I'm just going to put that in a book form.
You know, now, so your books, I'm assuming, yeah, you can find them mostly on Amazon, because that's the way most people do it today. Are you going to be doing any public book signings or things along those lines? Or are you pretty much just going to be selling it over Amazon with the other books that can be found?
It's a lot for me, Amazon. It's going to be on Kindle. But we are going to do some public appearances, book signings. I haven't set them up with, you know, the Barnes & Noble and the Books A Million yet, but they're going to be. And then plus, I definitely want to do some stuff with the local libraries and stuff around here.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of libraries around the Ohio area that do book signings. I know that was exclusively how I sold most of mine, because mine flopped miserably. Of course, I went to a publishing company, did this stupid thing, didn't know anything about Amazon at the time, spent thousands of dollars, and still have a crate of them in my basement. But but the libraries were very wonderful with it. I donated some of the books to the local libraries up here and did a lot of book signings and so forth. So you should have a good response with most of the libraries here in the Ohio area. I think you'll be amazed. Ohio's a wonderful place once you get used to it.
Well, with me, it's getting used to it. I love it so far. I mean, it's a lot different, especially than the Branson area, because Branson was all tourism. You know, you had 10,000 people basically that lived in Branson, but any given day during the summertime, you had over 300,000 people there.
Uh-huh.
So, big difference. Big difference. But also one of the things that I keep on catching myself with, and I'm, you know, asking Nikki, well, what the heck is this? You know, is the no food tax here on pretty much anything food-wise. I find that really strange, because in Missouri, you're paying taxes on it. And you're usually going to pay a crap load of taxes on it, especially in the Branson area.
Yeah, we have a pretty high sales tax here, but there's no food tax, and we have some unique things here in Ohio that most people, it orients around the north, but my wife took some time getting used to the word drive-through, because you have your restaurant drive-thrus. She came from Wisconsin. You have your restaurant drive-thrus, but we have carryouts here. And so that everybody knows, listeners in Ohio, obviously my Ohio listeners will know what this is, but a carryout, basically, you can go through to buy soda, tobacco, alcoholic beverages, pretty much everything, and you don't get out of your car. You just drive up, you tell them what you want, they give it to you, you give them your cash or your credit card, they run it through, and they're good to go. Well, Wisconsin has absolutely none of those. So she was just amazed when you could drive through somewhere and pick up a soda.
Nick introduced me to that one my first day here. I'm like, what the heck? She goes, you don't have drive-thrus in Missouri? I'm like, no, not that I know of.
Well, we have an amazing haunted history here. The people that are here in Ohio know a lot about it, but the people that aren't here in Ohio, the only ones that they hear about is the Akron Asylum. They'll hear about the Ohio State Reformatory, you know, a handful of things that are fairly famous and, excuse me, most television shows have been to. But we have a phenomenal haunted history outside of that, from Delaware, Ohio, which has a haunted observatory, to Cleveland, Ohio, which the museum is haunted on. Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is haunted, but we have another Air Force museum. Well, it's not really a museum. It's an Air Force base. It's an old airplane base, but they have a lot of planes there that's haunted. There's a lot of local locations, schools. Posttown Elementary is one of them, and there's several other elementary schools. We have an amazing haunted history all across the state of Ohio.
Yeah, she's taking me to a couple little graveyards just here in the Columbus area. That's pretty cool. And, you know, she's got some really good pictures from those graveyards. Nice little ghost girl, she likes to call her. We've been there, but, you know, now, like I told her, we're just kind of waiting. If people need help here in the area, you know, I'm here to help.
Well, I have a documentary that we're putting together, and you're welcome to stop in and talk to everybody, give them your experiences, tag along. I have a young team called Team Rat that has just got into the paranormal. They are literally brand new. We've taught them some of the gadgets, some of the cameras, some of the basics, and I'm bringing a lot of paranormal investigators from across the United States to teach them along the way, along with the documentary that's going to show some investigators and what they're doing. But, I mean, you're welcome to tag along to one of their investigations if you want to, and stop into the meetings while we're filming and just talk about how the paranormal is, because these guys are all brand new. So they don't have an aspect of being in the field for too long. They're not doing residential currently at all because, as you know, it takes a lot to learn how to do a residential case. But they are doing some of the more famous places. There'll be a post town on March 12th. We've got them scheduled for Mansfield, I do believe, late March or early April. And then, of course, some of them, one of them is going to be tagging along with me at Ohio State Reformatory in Waverly as well. So I'm kind of excited about it. You're more than welcome to tag along there. Let's talk a little bit, get back into you a little bit. I know we've been talking a little bit about Ohio and other things, but let's talk a little bit about your experience in investigations. We know you worked on a lot of demonic cases for a little while, but I'm sure you used a lot of other things too. So what type of instruments did you use when you were out in the field? What did you find was most useful and least useful? Things along those lines.
Honestly, I use mostly the basics. You know, almost like going back to the old days, because I believe, you know, good voice recorder. And, you know, we use K2 meter, you know, very basics. And mostly just a camera. I mean, I don't like using all the fancy stuff. I'll bring it every now and then. You know, we have some of it. We do have, you know, the ghost box, or the spirit box, people call it. We have, you know, God, it's been a while since I had the stuff out. You know, of course, you know, the thermal thermometer, we're getting ready to go ahead and probably go ahead and invest into a an actual thermal camera, just because those look cool. But, I mean, with me, it, like I said, it's basics. I like, you know, I found something here, right around my birthday in June, I found something that looked really cool that, you know, would work well, because I always, you know, I like to have my hands free when I'm doing an investigation so I can take pictures or video or, you know, something else. But at the same time, if I had the recorder in my hand, it was kind of hard, and I didn't want to, you know, rub it just a little bit, and it makes all kinds of weird sounds. So I found one that you can actually, more like a watch. You just put on your wrist, like a wristwatch, and that thing is awesome. That's one, that's probably my favorite.
I actually debated on getting one of those. I've seen it several times, but I wondered how useful it would be, so that's kind of cool to know.
They are very useful, very, very useful.
My technical guy, Joel, and myself have been working on some ideas for thermal, because as you know, real thermal cameras can be very, very pricey on the budget, especially if you get into a good one. But Paranormal Journeys and Gavin showed us a unique little thermal device. It runs about $300, plugs into a Windows tablet, and you can use the Windows tablet screen as your thermal. I had the privilege of seeing them test that out to show us. They'd used it several times at Posttown Elementary when we tagged along with them. And I got to tell you, it did every bit as well as some of the more professional thermal cameras that run anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000. Amazing little
friends had probably, you know, that kind of version of, you can get on Amazon, I think, for $299 or $399.
Uh-huh.
And it was pretty cool. We used it on one of our documentary that we did that we just never released because we had too much stuff going on, and I haven't felt like editing it because I've been too busy with everything else, so it's just kind of there waiting right now. But
it happens. It takes a long time to put together a documentary anyway. Ours is on a 5-year plan currently, and we're actually pitching it as a limited show. Basically, the goal of Generation Truth is to come in and discuss the real truths of the paranormal, to follow along real paranormal teams, to follow along real paranormal people and tell their stories so that you understand that it's not quite like it is on television. That it does take a lot of setup, that a lot of people, when they're in paranormal teams, they don't have a production team coming in before them to set up all the equipment so that they can come in. They have to run all the wires themselves. They have to book all the locations themselves. Sometimes they spend 6 to 12 hours in a location and don't get anything. Sometimes they're in there for 15 minutes and get everything. Those are the little things that people hear about from time to time, but you don't really get a chance to see it. You don't see the real lives of these people that are out there. All you do is see an hour television show and assume that's real life.
Yeah, like I know for a fact, you know, I don't really know if I want to mention, but, you know, one of the shows that's on television, you know, they talk about, you know, they get all this information, all this evidence while they're doing their lockdown overnight. No, they're there for a couple weeks. It's not just that one night.
Uh-huh.
I know that. You know, sometimes, of course, it's, you know, 3 or 4 days to a week. But they were recently, before I moved, they were in Branson. And so they were there at a couple of locations for, you know, a lot more time than what they show on TV. Anyway,
uh-huh.
I'll say that.
Well, and that's, I worked on what is called a production B crew, which a lot of people don't understand either, is if you're a 4-man team in your regular investigation team, you have to purchase your equipment, you have to set it up on your own, you have to run the wires on your own, and you have to hope everything works out right. When you're dealing with a television show, there's an A crew and a B crew. The A crew is generally there on the set the day of the visit. So if you're doing a reality TV shoot, the A crew is there to make sure that the equipment that's already set up is working fine. They're changing the cameras to get good shots from time to time, and it's very limited. The B crew, which is what I was on, we'd go in on some of these TV shows, and we'd set up 24 to 48 hours before they even got there. All the wires were ran, cameras were set up, infrareds were set up, whatever you needed was already set up, so all they really had to do was come in, plug and go. I don't think a lot of people understand that that's the case. You know, when you're a small team, you don't have that privilege. You're going in 2 hours early and hoping you have enough time to get 1 or 2 hours worth of footage if you're in a 4-hour location.
Yeah, I mean, like right now, you know, our crew, we're looking at you know, 5 or 6 people right now when we had a lot more before. But like, well, when we shot the documentary, we had just a rough estimate. We had about 10 to 12 people. But it still took a long time. And a lot of actual camera footage and a lot to go over to see if we had, you know, if we got anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, we knew we had, you know, so many days to get the evidence that we wanted and enough that we needed. So we were lucky and we ended up getting plenty of evidence because we were in one of the, probably, I would say, the most demonic location I've ever been in my life.
Well, I'm actually looking forward into getting back into some of those locations. I know that you've had an incredible history of being in haunted locations, actually. Branson itself has a lot of haunted history in it. So I'm sure you went to probably every one of those locations somewhere along the line in your history of investigating. But what do you think is the most memorable one of the bunch?
That bed and breakfast that I was just talking about over in Forsyth.
Uh-huh.
We, over in Forsyth, Missouri, it's the actual county seat of Taney County, which is the same county as Branson. But, you know, it's Branson without tourism and about 8,000 less people. But there's a little bed and breakfast outside town called the Historic Honeymoon. Now, this place, over the years, I mean, it has a big history back from... It was built originally in 1912 as the Ozark Beach Hotel. During that time, they had a lot of gangsters and stuff like that because just, you know, right down the river, basically, a couple miles down the river is Rockaway Beach, and that was considered the gangster hideaway during, you know, the 1920s, 30s, because Al Capone had a vacation home there. It was said that, you know, Dillinger hid out there from time to time. We know Bonnie and Clyde came through there different times. Now, this bed and, or no, it was the Ozark Beach Hotel. They had a lot of violence there with, you know, the gangsters and stuff. And at one point, when it was the Ozark Beach Hotel, Bob Barker, yes, the Bob Barker from Price is Right, was a bellboy there. I had no idea. He was even anywhere near the Branson area. Perfect. He was there as a bellboy at the same place. In 1945, this place was turned into a nursing home. And in that nursing home, it wasn't just a regular nursing home, I guess, because they had, you know, a lot of mentally ill people there. When I interviewed the different nurses and stuff that worked there then, they said, oh, yeah, it was more of a sane asylum because there were some really crazy people there. By, I do believe, 1999, somebody else bought it, and it was turned into, like a restaurant for a short while. Then I would say within a year to 2 years of that, that's when the Historic Honeymoon came in. And their whole purpose was, you know, just a bed and breakfast place where someone had go after, you know, their honeymoon, something like that. Now, they were there up until about 2010 and 2011, something like that, and they went out of business. And there hasn't been anyone, you know, start a business since then. It's, you know, been bought and sold several times. But during the time that it was empty, a lot of the old, you know, Forsyth kids, teenagers would go in there and break into the place and party, you know, drink beer. Different ones would play with Ouija boards in there. There was even some satanic rituals that were done inside the building. And then it didn't help, I found out, you know, when I was doing more research on it, that there was a satanic cult, like right across the street where there's a what they call Empire Park over there. They were doing rituals and stuff there. So, of course, there's a lot of darkness surrounding this building. First time we ever went in there, you know, like you talked about, you know, nothing was really going on. Even my ex-partner didn't really catch up on anything too horrible at the time. We ended up going back like the very next night, and it was totally different. Almost just like, you know, like I've said before, you know, like all hell breaking loose. you know, she, I know she got freaked out and said, you know what, we got to go now. There's something really bad coming. I just don't know what it is, but it's bad. We ended up leaving, go back and forth, you know, quite a bit for the next couple of months. And then later on, I bring part of the team out there. She didn't go. She stayed home. But we all went out there, and one of our younger team members, she had just turned 18 years old, and, you know, she wanted to go to see this place that we've been talking about. So we took her to it, and by the time, I would say not even being there, you know, within 20 minutes, she was under full possession. And we clocked out, and we got it on video while we were fighting that out on the porch. We ended up finally, after fighting her for about an hour there altogether, we ended up was able to get her in the vehicle and took her back to the house where we actually had to do this exorcism. Well, from that point forward, you know, the rest of the team members, you know, our two main team members that live in Florida, we're going to come down and, you know, we're going to do this documentary. Because at this point, I think we just kind of wanted revenge, I think, because we were going to bless it by the time we were done. We ended up doing the documentary, doing the blessing, and after a couple different blessings, it took a while because this place is just bad. We ended up finally getting rid of what was there, and last I knew, there still hadn't been any problems with the new owners.
Well, and we hate to actually, we're running out of the time here, and I apologize for this, Wesley, but we are going to reschedule you to bring in for a full show because of the technical difficulty. So you and I will work that out here over the weekend on when I'll get you back on, and we'll make sure that we get your whole story. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. Host Christopher Houston, we've been talking to Wesley Fox. Wesley Fox will be joining us again. Again, I apologize for the listeners and to Wesley for the technical difficulties. We are about at the end of our show. Make sure that you look up Wesley Fox on Facebook. He also has a set of books on Amazon currently. Make sure you look those up. Wesley, I certainly appreciate you working with us today. Again, I apologize for the shortcoming of this show, but we'll definitely get you back on here in the next week or two and do a full show with you. As you're noticing with the technical difficulties, everyone, and I always end the show the same way, in the paranormal, truth should always be the reality. Unfortunately, we didn't get all of Wesley's truth today because we ended up with that technical difficulty. We will get that truth when he returns. We will let everybody enjoy their weekend. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.